Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined stateside by my partner, Jeff Reinbold, with just 1 week to go, Jeff, until the start of the 2017 regular season. I'm back from my holiday, and I'm ready. I'm in football mode.
I tell you what, it is such a great time right now because you got college football started, the CFL is going full steam, and now the NFL starts next Thursday night. So if you're a football guy, baby, this is our time of the year.
Yeah, I've had my fill of Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse. Now I'm ready for some football. And I actually went and saw a football game while I was on my holiday. So it's a bit of a busman's holiday. So I'll talk about that in a second. We've got so much to catch up on. 2 weeks worth of news, and there's been headlines from start to finish. But Jeff, you've been traveling around. I've been following you on Twitter, and I know lots of people reach out to you on Twitter, and you interact and tell us where you are and what you've been up to. Where have you been across the U.S. In the last couple of weeks?
I've been all over the place. I've went down and accepted an invitation to come down and spend 3 days with the Dolphins in Philadelphia when they were having their interactive practices, which I think, Neil, I think that's the wave of the future. I think that's where we're going to go, and we'll have fewer and fewer preseason games, especially with the injuries we've seen. And it was really an amazing experience to get embedded with them and all of the things that we see on the outside sometimes aren't exactly the way it is on the inside. I came away extremely, and I mean extremely impressed with Adam Gase. He has that it factor that very few coaches have. It was awesome to see J-Train and, Lawrence Okoye and spend time with those guys, outside of the practice environment in the dining hall, talking to see how they were doing. And then I saw some things structurally that I thought were exciting if you're a Dolphins fan. I thought, and I can't give away state secrets, but I thought that their new defensive coordinator had found some ways to utilize Ndamukong Suh in different packages, different ways than they have in the past, and create really tough matchups for the offensive linemen. Cameron Wake was absolutely lights out in the interactive practice. And interestingly enough, Cameron's agent's my agent, and so I had an opportunity to spend some time with him. Really a refreshing kind of guy.
Good guy, isn't he?
In the National Football League, absolutely, Neil. And he's not a young kid. He's now at the back end of his career, and I think there's a sense of urgency in Dolphin land about being good and taking that next step. And, I'm going to talk about a guy right now that's kind of been a lightning rod through his whole career, and that's Jay Cutler. And, after those days of watching him on the practice field, seeing him around his teammates, listening to what the coaches talked about, I'm going to tell you something. If I was a Dolphins fan, I'd be optimistic.
Yeah, Jeff, I was watching a couple of the Dolphins preseason games while I was out in the States and watching them on TV very closely. And Cutler was solid in the first one, very limited action, and then started to open things up a little bit more. Looks like he is going to favor getting the ball out to Devontae Parker, who could be the Alshon Jeffrey that Cutler had when he was with the Chicago Bears. So what was it you liked about Cutler when you saw him on the practice field? Because obviously then you get to see, you're not just watching him throw a football in front of the television cameras. You're seeing how he chats to people on the sidelines. You're seeing how he interacts. Even if he's not in the huddle or on the field, you can kind of tell something about a person when they're walking up and down the sidelines. What was it you saw from Jay Cutler?
Well, I think number one, I think there's a tremendous amount of respect between Gase and Cutler. I think that, they've worked together before in Chicago. I think, I think Cutler believes that Gase, can help him be a better quarterback. What was impressive to me, Neil, and again, he still suffers from bad body language. He just has that kind of look about him sometimes that he looks like he's disinterested or not. But I watched really closely through the practices, and that's when a guy will drift in practice, when it's not his reps. And, they were using these interactive practices are opportunities for the coaches to work on their mechanics too. So they had the headsets in, and they were calling the plays from the sideline to the quarterback, and he had to use his headset. And I watched him when it wasn't his reps. He had his helmet off, but he had his headset up by his ear as he was standing off to the side and behind the Dolphin offense. And he was really locked in to what the play was and, you know, the formations and the splits and all those things. So from a coaching standpoint, you know, I thought this guy gets it. Now, physically, let me just tell you, Neil, I can understand why he's gotten as many chances as he's gotten, and he has highly thought. His arm is unique,
right.
And his ability to throw from what we call in coaching different throwing platforms,
mm-hmm.
where his feet aren't always in perfect position. Like he threw a touchdown to Fasano in the interaction that I watched. It was about a 30-yard touchdown on a corner route, and the pocket started to collapse around him a little bit, and so he wasn't able to really step up into the throw and slide up into the pocket, which is what you want to be able to do. And still was able to put he dropped it right where it had to be. And I just came away from that throw going, man, oh, man, oh, man. If this guy can kind of, you know, limit the disaster throws that he has a tendency to make or has had a tendency to make, with their ability to run the ball, they've got weapons. And you talked about Devontae Parker. The last day before walkthrough, I think it was Wednesday, I stayed out there because Isaac Seumalo, who's the starting left guard for the Eagles, I coached his dad in NFL Europe, Joe, and in the CFL, so I was spending some time with him. And the last bus left the Eagles training facility to go back to the hotel, the Lowe's downtown where we're staying. And they gave the players the opportunity to lift if they wanted to on their own at the Eagles facility. Well, the bus had about 7 guys on it, and 3 of them were film guys. But the players that got on the bus after having a lifting session after full-on practice, and Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Wake, and Devontae Parker. And that shows me an awful lot.
Well, that is really interesting because Adam Gase kind of put him on notice earlier in the offseason, Jeff, and actually went as far as to say, if you say you're going to be somewhere, then be there. It was almost like he was saying that Devontae Parker needed to be more accountable. I sat and interviewed Parker just a couple of weeks ago. He's still a young kid, still, you know, not very comfortable in interview situations, and, you know, has some growing to do in that aspect. But I think with Cutler launching the football down the field, and we saw that in the actual game against Philadelphia, I think he could have a breakout year.
The only place right now, if I'm a Dolphin fan, where I'm a little bit, I've got some concerns, is their offensive tackle positions, to me right now, are still not settled. Philadelphia's got some great pass rushers. I mean, they have some guys that can come off the edge. But there were too many times in those interactions, for me, there are just too many times that the pocket just collapsed really quickly on the quarterback. So I think what they're going to have to do is, you know, play action, move the pocket a little bit, throw quick, you know, let him get the ball out of his hands fast. Because you look at that Dolphin offense now, Neil, and there's weapons all over the place.
I mean,
they're good at wide out. Fasano is a underrated tight end to me. They've got young guys coming, pushing the older veterans. They've really done a good job there, and I think that team is, you know, on the rise. A
couple of more things from your observations with the Dolphins and Eagles, Jeff, and then we'll move on. I've been saying for about a year now that I'm buying what Adam Gase is selling. Certainly really impressed by him. I got to spend time with him and was impressed with the way he handles himself. There's a little bit of a cold edge to him, and you can tell he's been influenced along the way by Belichick or people who've worked for Bill Belichick. What was it you liked about Adam Gase?
Well, you know what was really interesting to me? Matt Sheldon, who's their runs their football research department, which is basically their analytics department, is a close friend of mine. And so he and Adam go back a long ways. They go back all the way to Denver, where Matt did independent projects for Adam. And you know, they have a close tie because they both are Mike Martz guys.
Mm.
You know, Adam, if you know his story, Neil, he never played college football. He went to Michigan State and did not play. He was a student assistant, just walked into Nick Saban's office, who was the head coach at Michigan State at the time, and said, "Hey, I'm a student here. I'd like to do anything to help the program. I want to coach one day." And so they gave him a job, not a job that paid, just a volunteer job. And then back in those days, you had the mimeograph machines and the, you know, photocopies and all that stuff way before the computer age. And that was part of his job. And he just kept working and working and working, kept his head down, and you know, again, had a did all the grunt work. I mean, all the grunt. Here's young coaches sometimes don't get it, right? They think that, you know, you go be an position assistant for a year, then you're a coordinator, and then, you know, 2 years later, and then you're head coach 5 years into it. It was 13 years, Neil, 13 years that Adam Gase was in coaching before he ever coached his own position, before he ever had a position to coach. He was always an assistant, always that guy doing all the work. But here's where it's really helped him. He had a chance to learn, and because he did all the playbooks and all the, you know, all the work from Martz, he had a chance to learn from the inside out that greatest show on turf passing game, right? And then because of his work with Belichick and the, you know, the Patriot offense and all of the combination of things because of Josh McDaniel, right, his time in Denver, he really knows inside and out two of the most prolific offenses in NFL history. And so he's incredibly intelligent guy. He's got an edge to him, like you say. There's a little bit of hardness to him that I think head coaches need to have. But he also is a fun guy, because we had gone out to practice one day and they were working what they call inside run, which in today's NFL, that means you run the ball twice and then you run bootleg and naked and play action. And so, you know, and I don't know him more than an hour, and I kind of teased him a little bit. I said, play selection and inside run was a little interesting. He told me that he told Jim Schwartz he wasn't going to run it at all. He was going to pass it every down.
he's one of those guys, Jeff. I think he's very, very comfortable when the cameras are off. Obviously, there's a persona there that a head coach has to have. And we had a great chat on camera. He was very, very good and very interesting. But off camera, he was honest. He was kind of self-deprecating. He was, he kind of swore it up quite a bit, if I'm honest. He was like very down to earth and very, very much a man's man in that respect, the way he was kind of talking about, you know, coaching and the hours they put in. I just really came away impressed by him. And I think, you know, he's been influenced by the Patriots and people that have worked around that team, because he said he wants the same thing. He wants players that love football, and he wants players that are tough and intelligent. Those are three attributes you have to be a Patriot.
Yeah, you know what? And you, like I say, you follow his career, and you really root for the guy because of how hard he's worked to get that opportunity. And, you know, he's a football rat. I mean, here's a case in point. His wife is Joe Vitt's daughter. Now, Joe Vitt is probably 40-year NFL assistant, been an interim head coach in a couple of places in the NFL. And Joe's a lifer, a tough guy from Jersey. You know, I mean, he's a football guy. And that's the family he married into. And you know, again, he is all about ball all the time. And, again, I think that's shown in his approach in Miami, and I think it's starting to be reflected in his football team.
I asked him how he balanced the whole work-life thing, Jeff, which we talk about so much on this podcast, and he said horribly. He actually used, but he said, luckily, my wife's had a life in coaching, and so she knew about it, and his wife was like, it's too depressing to sleep in the office. Don't sleep in the office. Stay at the hotel by the facility. So he kind of does that when he's busy during the season, but very interesting guy and a very good coach for the Miami Dolphins. One last thing on the Philadelphia Dolphins practices. You saw, Jeff, Carson Wentz, high hopes for him this year from the Eagles. What did you think? What did you see?
You know what? That one, again, this is why these interactions are such fun to go do. Doug Peterson, the head coach of the Eagles, was our quarterback at Ryan in 1995. So I had a chance to talk to him, and I said, you know, Doug, I'm proud of you. You know, I think you've really turned this thing back where, you know, they're going to be – I think the Eagles are going to be a better football team than people give them credit
for. Yes, I agree.
But I'm going to tell you something. I said, you know, I really like what you did with your young quarterback, because I think they gave him just about as much as he could handle through the course of the season, all short balls, things that he could do early, and then they started to expand on him. And I think he's taken the next step, Neil. You watch him. He's very comfortable in the pocket now. He commands the offense. I mean, he is the deal. And, you know, Doug said to me, he goes, now, I'm just going to tell you, he can be a little hard-headed. I said, well, that's not a bad thing all the time, and especially if you're going to mold one, you want the best, you know, piece of clay you can find. And I tell you what, that's a pretty good looking piece of clay, because he is all of 6'4", and he is a man, and he can move. Mm. I mean, he can escape and get out of pocket and has all the arm you could ever want.
Let's stick with quarterbacks, Jeff, as we try and catch up on all the news from around the NFL. And the starting quarterbacks for Week 1, as we mentioned as we're recording this, Week 1 is just 1 week away from today, Thursday. And they've started to name some of the starters from these quarterback battles. DeShone Kizer has got the job in Cleveland, Trevor Siemian in Denver, Blake Bortles in Jacksonville, Tom Savage in Houston, and Josh McCown with the New York Jets. Some of these jobs have been won, Jeff. I wonder if some of them have been lost along the way rather than that person winning them. But let's just start with DeShone Kizer, because I went to the Bucks-Browns game. I know I was supposed to be in the land of Mickey Mouse, but I took in an NFL game. It was the first time, Jeff, I've been able to watch a live NFL game with my kids because I'm always working.
Yeah, you know what? It's. I'm going to get that same experience tonight. I'm going to go watch the Broncos play, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Emmanuel and seeing Vance and those guys. But just watching the game and not have to be worried about, you know, when we go to commercial break,
yep.
Or, you know, it's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, no.
Do you think, Neil? What was your takeaway on Kizer?
Well, I think I really liked him, and I looked at his stats afterwards, and they didn't blow off the page. They were 5 of 12 or 5 of 30. I don't know. They just didn't look very good in terms of looking at the pure numbers. But I was really impressed, Jeff. He dealt with terrible field position. First of all, it was pouring with rain the entire game. So he's got wet football, slick field. He started one drive at his own 1 yard line and he completed about 3 third down passes, drove them out to midfield. Then they had to punt. He started another drive on his 5. Good footwork, very, very good at kind of keeping a play alive in the pocket. Really, really strong arm. And a couple of plays, Jeff, where he had to throw it that kind of half a yard to the outside or it was going to get picked off, and he did that. So I was very impressed with him for a first outing. Now, there's a couple of things which I'm sure you'll say, well, that's typical of a rookie quarterback. There was one play where he got up to the line of scrimmage and he audibled, and he kind of audibled and pointed out to the left to Corey Coleman, the wide receiver. And he's pointing and shouting something to Corey Coleman. Then he takes the snap. He looks in Corey Coleman's direction the entire time. And then he drills one in there, which it was very close to being picked off, but it was a perfect pass in terms of accuracy, and he completed it. He did get intercepted later in the first half, and he stared down the receiver then. So I think he's got to watch out for that stuff, but I can see if the Browns invested a second-round draft pick in him and they didn't see enough from Osweiler and Kessler, I can see why they've made this move.
Yeah, I think this is one of those ones, Neil, where you talk about winning and losing a job. I think it's a bit of both.
Mm.
Because obviously Osweiler didn't do enough in his opportunities in preseason to take the job and with a stranglehold. And then I think Kizer, you know, and again, you got to always weigh this against what you're seeing, right? Because the first two preseason games, the defensive coordinator, they don't even game plan those, typically. Now, once you get into weeks three, that's usually the dress rehearsal week, right?
Because yeah.
week four, the guys that aren't going to get cut are going to play. You know, the thing that I didn't like about him at Notre Dame, or the two things that I questioned him when he was at Notre Dame, was number one, I didn't like his accuracy, and number two, you know, when you're 4-8 at Notre Dame, that's not very good, because you should be 8-4 at Notre Dame just by putting your helmet on.
Right.
And so when you looked at that, I said, gosh, underachieved at a great place, you know, kind of never had a real good relationship with his head coach. You know, there was always they were always never on the same page. But boy, I think he's kind of found a home with Hugh, and Hugh's one of those guys that has a way with players. And, you know, if the Browns can win 6 this year, I think that's got to be what they're looking for. Keep the kid healthy. Mm. Don't give him too much. It's going to be a whole different thing once the regular season starts. But, you know, the only thing I would worry about if I'm a Browns fan in this situation is the, you know, what I call the Blake Bortles syndrome, where he's the best you have, and so you shove him out there early, and he's going to have some flashes. He's going to show you that he can do some things, but he's going to struggle. And when they struggle, sometimes that can set them back.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so you look at what the Bears are trying to do with Trubisky. you know, that's the only thing I worry about with Deshaun Kizer right now.
I tell you what's going to help him out, Jeff. I thought Corey Coleman had a good night. He looked like he was going to be explosive and a decent playmaker. And the offensive line offered up great protection. So you've got Joe Thomas at left tackle. They re-signed Joel Bitonio. They've got Kevin Zeitler at guard and J.C. Tretter at center. So they look good on the offensive line. And you and I know all about Christian Kirksey, but not the rest of the NFL. But he was a guy who stood out all night long. He had a sack on a blitz. So, yeah, the Browns, I think. And they still did some Browns-like things, Jeff. They kept a drive alive. Tampa Bay were lining up to kick a field goal, and the Browns jumped offside, and the Bucs continued the drive, which actually ended in a Jameis Winston interception, which he still needs to tidy up. That's one part of his game that they wanted to get eradicated from a year ago. But, you know, the Browns still do some funny things, but I think they're going to be an improved team. I think it's worth a roll of the dice because I don't think they're a playoff team. So why not get the young guy in there? Provided
I think that the thing that you got to go back to when you talk about Cleveland, and I think the same thing to a little bit of a lesser extent, because the cupboard wasn't quite as bare in San Francisco. But everybody in the organization's got to understand there's a plan. You got to work the plan, and you got to stay with the plan. And you look at what they did this week, cutting Joe Hayden.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Joe Hayden's one of the, you know, he's a top half in the NFL, probably top 25% in the NFL corner. And you cut a guy like that, well, you cut him because you know that that's going to free up money for you. I think he kind of struggled a little bit with Greg Williams. And so when you look at that, you say, all right, you know, we're planning for the future. Let's get our young guys in. You know, we're gonna just stay with this, and it's gonna get rough and it's gonna get rocky. But we're just gonna, if they can stay the course, I think the Browns are on the right path.
Mm. Jeff, I think Josh McCown won the job in New York because Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg didn't show anything. And here's a tricky one because you mentioned him just a couple of minutes ago. Did Blake Bortles win the job in Jacksonville? Because when I was out in the States, they handed the starting job to Chad Henne against Carolina, and Chad Henne was awful in the first half of that game. And then we suddenly hear that Blake's been given all the motivation he needed and now he's back to being the starter. If Chad Henne had lit it up, maybe Chad Henne's the starter as we speak about it today. I don't know that the Jags are completely sold on Blake Bortles. I do know from talking to observers very close to that team, this is the year for Blake Bortles. It's put up or shut up time, and you're going to be moved on if not.
Well, you know what? I would have loved to been a fly on the wall in those coaches' meetings and those meetings with Coughlin, because I think if this is all part of Doug's approach, I'm talking about Doug Marrone, the head coach. You know, he Doug's a no nonsense guy, and he's a production guy. And I think some of that was saber rattling, if you will, Neil, where they, you know, they want Bortles to understand, you know, this, hey, you're not just anointed the starting quarterback here. You gotta produce like everybody else. And I think that's kind of the sense of urgency that you sense around the Jags right now. But again, now here you're talking about a guy who's been through some tough situations. He had a bad football team around him when he started. He's been hit a bunch. The offensive line had all kind of challenges. He's been with three or four different coordinators in 4 years in the NFL. Again, these kinds of things are the things that set quarterbacks back. And frankly, Neil, some guys never recover from it.
No,
now, there are other guys that can take that deep breath and focus and then come back. But, you know, again, that he's a talented enough guy. He's shown that. Now he just has to eliminate the mistakes and become a more consistent guy. And I think that, you know, if he doesn't do that, then you probably will see the Jags move in another direction.
You just mentioned about injuries being a part of the preseason, Jeff, and it does seem this year that more teams are looking at those combined practices, and you can limit the hits on your players. You can certainly eradicate completely the hits on your quarterbacks, and injuries have been a part of the preparation for the new campaign. Cameron Meredith, who I thought was going to have a breakout year at receiver for the Bears, is out with a torn ACL. Spencer Ware, the running back for the Kansas City Chiefs, out for the season with a knee injury. We know about Ryan Tannehill being out for the Dolphins, hence Jay Cutler comes in. But the biggest news over last weekend was Julian Edelman of the New England Patriots out with a torn ACL. We went down at the end of a catch and run against the Detroit Lions. And Jeff, since week 10 of last year, no receiver was more productive in the NFL than Julian Edelman, including playoffs. He had 99.1 receiving yards per game. Julio Jones had 96.6 by way of comparison. They've got lots of other weapons, but there goes Tom Brady's safety blanket, right?
Yeah, you know what? This is such an interesting one to me, Neil, because who are we talking about last year that they had to replace it? How in the world are we ever going to replace them? And, you know, Gronkowski, right? So this is kind of like, I won't say it's, you know, water off a duck's back for the Patriots, because it's certainly not, because Edelman is, you know, the thing that you can't replicate is the chemistry that exists between a guy like Edelman and his quarterback. You know, they, when it was, and you look at those 99 yards per game,
especially in the slot, right, Jeff?
Yeah, how many of those yards, Neil, were third down yards?
Yeah,
when he needed to go to somebody, and I would be curious to find out how many of those were first downs. That's how you measure those slot receivers. And I think what you're going to see in New England, Neil, frankly, is that Hogan is going to take an expanded role in the slot. You know, they brought some diversity into their offense during the off season. You know, obviously Gronk and, you know, I mean, he goes without saying. But Brady's been sharp all preseason. I mean, he looks like Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback in the National Football League still. Will it hurt the Patriots? Obviously not going to help them. But I think that they have put themselves in a position with the people they brought in the offseason. And, you know, Hogan's second now year in the offense, that this will be a better or an easier transition than, this, let's say, Cam Meredith in Chicago. Because who in the heck are they going to – I mean, who's going to take that role now?
Yeah.
They just don't – they don't have anybody. And then let's talk about Spencer Ware. That's an interesting one, too, because get rid of Jamaal Charles. You say Spencer's going to be your guy. He's going to take that feature back role in Andy's offense. And now he goes down with an injury. And now you're looking at a third-rounder in Kareem Hunt who – you know, I think he had 11 carries for 63 yards the other day. He looked good, but, you know, I'm telling you now, these injuries impact your depth, and they impact your special teams, and they impact you in a lot of ways that, you know, you don't really think about till you, you know, as Mark Trestman used to say, there's always a trickle-down effect to all these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wandering past Ozzie Newsome chatting to Steve Bisciotti when I was in training camp with the Ravens. I don't know who they were talking about, Jeff, but I heard Ozzie turn to the owner and say, when one goes down, it's an opportunity for the next one. I thought, well, that's typical NFL. That's what they always think, right? It's you know, it's always that old cliche, next man up, and the Patriots are going to have to find that out. Just on the Patriots, Jeff, I still think, you know, widely they would be considered Super Bowl favorites, but the Edelman thing is a chink in the armor, and so is the release of Coney Ealy, who was, you know, being lauded as one of those kind of shrewd off-season moves. The Patriots didn't really, you know, dig deep in the draft. They went the veteran player route. And Coney Ealy, who had three sacks in Super Bowl 50, is now a member of the New York Jets. That one clearly didn't pan out. But I guess at least the Patriots, they don't kind of hang on to a bad mistake. If they see it's not right, they just move on, right?
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. That you hit it exactly on the head. Because what happens in most organizations when you make a mistake?
You try and justify it for year after year.
You're going to try and cover it up, and you're going to try and justify the money that you spent and all those other things. But that's where the power structure in New England is so unique, because it's basically Belichick and Mr. Kraft, and that's it.
Yeah.
Now, when you have these layered, you know, power structures, there's the head coach, there's the owner, then there's the president of football operations, then there's the general manager, then there's the personnel, you know, head of personnel, and then the head coach is down in there somewhere. It's like Hugh Jackson said, I'd love to keep Joe Hayden, but it's not my choice.
Right.
Well, that's a different kind of power structure. Not saying it's bad, it's just different. So if you make a mistake on a player, well, then, and let's say it was a personnel guy, they misevaluated the guy. Well, if you have to cut him after you've given him a signing bonus, now the owner's bean counters are saying, whoa, wait a second here. We gave that guy how many million dollars, and he can't play? So if you have that kind of power structure, then the tendency is to hold on to players and try and justify your mistake longer. With the Patriots, if they feel a guy's a mistake, he's not in there. They're going on to the next thing because it's all about, you know, the Patriot way.
You mentioned dollars there, Jeff. Let's talk a little bit of dollars and cents, because there's a lot of it heading in the direction of Matthew Stafford. He's now the official highest paid player in NFL history. So Derek Carr held that mantra for what, a couple of months? Derek Carr of the Raiders. Matthew Stafford has signed a 5-year extension. So he's now got a 6-year deal, but the 5-year part of his deal is worth $135 million in new money. And Jeff, when you break it down, you actually look at it, this is not one of those backloaded, the team hasn't really committed to him. The team are going to give him a $50 million signing bonus. That's the most in NFL history, with his base salary, which is only $1 million actually in year one. He's going to get $51 million guaranteed in year one. By March of next year, so he's only got to play this coming season, he will have earned $86 million of that contract in the first two, well, by going into year two. By contrast, Andrew Luck, who was previously the highest paid, he accumulated $60 million going into year two. And Derek Carr's is worth just $47 million into year two. Drew Brees saw this deal for Matthew Stafford and sent him a text message that just said, "Wow." What did you think of Matthew Stafford's new contract with the Lions?
It's good work if you can get it. You know what I'm wondering? I'm listening to these names, right, the highest paid guy. What is it, a prerequisite that you got to play behind a bad offensive line to get to make money as a quarterback in this league?
Well, Jeff, actually, the whole who's next thing is an interesting conversation, because if you look at Matthew Stafford, there's two schools of thought. There's some who say, well, all the fourth quarter comebacks, one of the best pure passers in the NFL. And then his critics will say, yeah, and the good supporters will say he kind of dragged up a bad or average Detroit team. His critics will say he's never won a playoff game. Then there's a guy sitting in the same division, Aaron Rodgers, who's probably putting his hand up and saying, pay me what he's getting. I mean, yeah, personally, I'm a Matthew Stafford fan, but he's been paid big money. But I guess this is the way that position's going. And if you're kind of next in line and you've got that leverage, you're going to become the highest paid player. Maybe we'll see it with Kirk Cousins next year.
I was going to say, you took the words out of my mouth. I said, the guy that's sitting there going, is Kirk Cousins' agent. Because now the bar has been raised. And, you know, if Cousins has another year and he can get him into the playoffs and make a run in the playoffs and all that stuff, hey, $50 million, well, that'll be just the starting point. Right, and that's the madness of it. But that also is reflective of how important that position, that single position, is. Neil, I'm gonna give you something that I learned when I was in Philadelphia. All right, there have been in the modern era in NFL football, there has only been one Hall of Fame coach who won a Super Bowl without. Or got into the Hall of Fame without having coached a Hall of Fame quarterback. Only one.
Wow.
Who was it?
Frankie.
I mean, you're talking about, you look at the guys that are in, you know, Dungy's in, Parcells is in, yada, 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 yada. I'm talking about in the modern era. There was one in the old days, George Halas, right?
All right.
But he's a Hall of Famer. I'm talking about in the modern era, since NFL-AFL merger.
Oh, my goodness.
There's only been one guy. And it's Joe Gibbs. That's the only guy.
Oh, yeah.
Every other Hall of Fame head coach has a Hall of Famer, had coached a Hall of Famer at quarterback.
Wow. Now, Jeff, let's go back and re-edit this. And straight away, when you finish saying that, I'll say Joe Gibbs. That'll sound really good.
There you go. That's the beauty of radio.
Yeah, but like Joe Gibbs, Jeff, of course.
Everybody knows that.
Come on, Jeff. But it's interesting there, isn't it? It shows you need to have the guy and the value of the position.
Well, here's why that's important. Because, okay, you say, okay, well, that's just an analytics guy giving you information. Well, it is information, but it's information you can use. So if you want to study, right, if you're a team that doesn't have an elite-level quarterback and you want to go off and you want to study how it was done, how you can win, right? Mm. Because, again, if you go back to the Redskins, they didn't have an elite-level defense either. Right, it wasn't like they were the 85 Bears.
No, they weren't.
So when you go back, now you go to a guy like Joe Gibbs and say, okay, how were you able to get that done in the modern era? And I think that's the beauty of the analytics. That's where people who listen or pay attention to Pro Football Focus and all that stuff, you can really learn this game.
Where are you on Stafford, Jeff? Are you a fan?
I like him. I like him. I liked him since he was a high school kid at Highland Park High School. I didn't like him at Georgia when he pounded us when we played him in the Sugar Bowl at Hawaii. But I remember walking on the field that night. We're 12-0, and we're in the Sugar Bowl, and we're, you know, I think we were ranked like 12th in the country, and we're playing Georgia. And I remember coming out for warm-ups, and the first thing most teams do is a drill called pat and go, you know, where the receiver's getting lines and the quarterback just, you know, soft, easy.
Yep.
They had a receiver, Muhammad Massaquoi, who played a little bit in the NFL at that time, was a great big tall kid. And he threw on about 40 yards just by flicking his wrist. And I looked over at Jerry Glanville and I said, Jerry, this may be a long day, brother.
They used to say that about Dan Marino, Jeff. You could hear his passes coming before you saw them. And I guess Cutler and Matthew Stafford, their arm strength, they kind of fall into that category. You can actually hear the football moving.
Yeah, you know, and the kid's a tough kid.
Yes.
You know, he's another one that I think his personality, it kind of works against him a little bit because he's not a, you know, he's not a guy that seeks the limelight. He's not a guy that, you know, is wants to be a marquee quarterback. I think he's a guy that, you know, is a competitive guy, a tough guy, a guy that certainly is good enough to get his team beyond what most other quarterbacks can do. And, you know, that's why I don't buy into that thing, well, he's never won a playoff game, or he's, you know, Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. Well, you know what? Dan Marino drugged some teams that weren't good enough into the playoffs just because he was Dan Marino.
Yeah.
And so you got to be careful when you start using those points of logic.
Yeah, that has been a knock on Stafford, actually, Jeff, about the whole leadership thing, because he's not a big speech maker. He's not the most sort of gregarious in front of the camera, but you know, you can lead in different ways. And the ways he gets up after being hit behind what's been a pretty dodgy offensive line for a couple of years, you know, and he's still in there and showing that toughness, that's leadership as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the leadership that really matters, because the voice, you know, guys that, you know, want to lead the cheer right before the game and, you know, do the Ray Lewis thing or the Drew Brees thing, you know, that's all good. But in the end, it's what you put on tape. And when your teammates see you getting hit right in the face and getting up and throwing again and getting up and throwing again, that speaks, what, you know, it's that old deal, you know, a picture speaks a thousand words. So I think that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road.
As we race towards week one, just touching on some other news from around the NFL, Jeff, we're still going to monitor these quarterbacks, big name quarterbacks who are going to try and get there for their season openers. Cam Newton was in preseason action when I was out in America. Very limited preseason action, albeit just a few passes against the Jags. Still no sign of Joe Flacco and still no sign of Andrew Luck. Which ones do you sense will make it for week one?
All right, I'm gonna give them to you in gradients. Mm-hmm. All right, Cam Newton will be there. Joe Flacco, I think, will be there.
Yep.
And Andrew Luck, I don't think will be there. I don't think we'll see Andrew. I don't think we'll see Andrew Luck for a few weeks. I tell you what, that is a team.
Don't tell me
right
that,
now.
Jeff.
I'm gonna break your heart, but I'm gonna tell you this: that's a team that is looking at a long season.
Jeff, they lost Ryan Kelly for half the season as well. First half of the season, he didn't give up a single sack as a rookie center last year. You know, you talk about the pressure and lack of protection for Andrew Luck. Well, there goes his best offensive lineman.
Yeah, and I watched them in preseason games, and they just don't. I don't know about that roster right now, and there's some work to be done in Indianapolis. And then when you don't have the guy that, like we tell you, the guy that can elevate everybody around him, that's going to be a tough start.
Jeff, let's touch on what was really a horrible situation, and still an ongoing situation in the United States: Hurricane Harvey and how it hit Houston, and now it's moved on to Louisiana. And J.J. Watt has just done this kind of tremendous thing. He's raised more than $9 million. It's probably already up above 10 by the time people listen to this. They cancelled the last preseason game between the Texans and Cowboys. There's still a chance. I guess the Texans open in week one at home against Jacksonville. Jacksonville have said, we're willing to swap those around because Jacksonville hosts the game against the Texans in Jacksonville in December. But just a horrible, horrible situation that's affected the football teams, but the football community has responded, led by J.J. Watt and several NFL owners around the league.
I think it's been an amazing story, and I think that, to be real honest with you, because I've watched it, you know, go, I don't think J.J. had any idea what he was about to unleash, because people all of a sudden in the NFL community and outside the NFL community, just the money and the effort and the cooperation and, as we say in Hawaii, the kukua, the help, just, I mean, it's amazing to see. It's incredible about human beings. We are capable of some really amazingly good things and then some amazingly bad things. But when you watch this thing, which is going on with Hurricane Harvey and what J.J. Watt's been able to spearhead, it is phenomenal. The Tennessee Titans family, you know, and that's Bud Adams' family. Now, see, here's the thing with that one. When the Titans gave $1 million, what amazed me was Bud Adams is vilified in Houston because he took the Oilers to Tennessee, right? And so the Oilers-Titans game, I mean, excuse me, the Houston Texans-Titans game is a huge game in Houston. I mean, it is a huge game because that's the guy that took pro football away from their city. Well, his daughter, who runs the team now, just gave $1 million to the disaster relief fund. You know, Woody Johnson with the Jets, $1 million to the disaster relief fund. So it's really good when you see people around, you know, the NFL family trying to help the state. The Cowboys are going to have a telethon to raise funds for, you know, for the disaster relief. Players from all over the league have jumped in and contributed time, effort, you know, money, all of it. So I think it's, again, a reflection of the goodness in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, players do make headlines for the wrong reasons, as we know, Jeff. And as we're recording this, Ezekiel Elliott's appeal hearing is still ongoing. That's going into a third day, so we can't really comment on that. But obviously, we'll give a nod to it. But Vontaze Burfict is another one who makes headlines for the wrong reason. I don't know if you saw the hit. It was while I was away, the hit on Chiefs running back Anthony Sherman, Jeff. He was given a 5-game suspension originally. It's been reduced on appeal to 3 games. But, you know, that is significant. That's a significant suspension. And I've got to think this is just the NFL trying to send a message to Vontaze Burfict, because it's time and time again. He's a repeat offender. And I think the only way you get the message across is not through these fines, which, you know, $30,000 is $30,000. Yes, it hurts. But if you're not out there for your teammates, and Vontaze Burfict is now going to miss 3 games this season, you know, that sends a bigger message, surely.
You know, this is a really interesting one to me, Neil, because obviously, you know, they took a chance on this kid. He wasn't drafted, not because he couldn't play or, you know, there was some flaw in his physical ability. He was drafted because nobody could control him all the way from high school to Arizona State, and then the Bengals, you know, took a chance, and he has repaid that chance by leading the NFL in tackles 1 year, but he's also can't seem to get past the stuff that, you know, I saw a statistic the other day, and I don't want to give numbers because I'm not exactly sure, but it's really significant, the number of games he has missed for his team because of these kind of things in the last 3 years.
And Jeff, at some point, sorry, just to interrupt you, at some point, because it's very easy to then point the finger at Marvin Lewis and say, you haven't coached him up, you haven't done a good job. But sometimes, you know, these players have to be accountable for their own actions. And, you know, it's all very well being an intense linebacker who's always around the football and leads the NFL in tackles. But if also you're on the sidelines for 3 games, then you're hurting the team.
Yeah, and, you know, again, it's the great mystery to me that when, you know, you hear players say it all the time, I want to be treated like a full-grown man, I'm a full-grown man, all that stuff. Well, if a full-grown man takes care of his responsibilities, and you have a responsibility to your teammates to be available, and when you're not available because of injury, that's one thing. But if you're not available because you can't control yourself, that's a whole nother issue. And so, you know, He's a lightning rod right now in the league. There are two things I want to say about this. The interesting part about it to me is the number one selling Bengals jersey, Vontez Perfect.
Everyone loves the villain.
Yeah, well, you know what? Sometimes the villain is the popular guy. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, you know, when you look at it, I'm going to tell you something. The NFL's got some work to do on the rules because what he did, Neil, is technically not illegal. That you can come down and hit a crossing receiver or eliminate a receiver underneath 5 yards, right? And I'd have to have a micrometer out to know looking at the tape, but it's very, very close. Now, if they say you hit a defenseless player because he had his back turned, that's a different issue. I think one of the reasons that the suspension got reduced to 3 games as opposed to 5 was Burfict's people went back in with the rule book and said, okay, well, wait a second. It's an illegal hit. Why? Right? So that's where the league's got to, you know, they got to clean that rule up. That's an old NFL rule that's been allowed to stay in. And my buddy Jerry Glanville, when he was in Atlanta, I think when they were playing San Francisco, and they used to run all those little short crossing routes, and he made the comment that they'll run out of receivers before we run out of linebackers. So, you know, that's just one of those things. And again, but to me, the reason he got the 5-game suspension is because he's a habitual offender. Yeah. I mean, you at some point, you hope the kid gets it.
But he's not going to have that room for error because, like you say, if it's a judgment call, then they're going to look at his previous form in that area and they're going to rule accordingly. It's interesting when you've mentioned the rule book, Jeff, because the appeal did get the sentence did get reduced, and it was reduced by the appeals officer, who was former NFL wide receiver James Thrash. So it was actually a wide receiver that favored in favor of Vontez Perfect a little bit there.
You know, and again, I think that's because the fact of the matter is that, you know, by the letter of the rule, it was not an illegal hit.
All right, let's move on to our mailbag, Jeff. We've got quite a few questions, including a good one from Peter Joy. And before I read out the question, I'll set the scene, because by Saturday, 32 NFL teams will release around about 37 players per team. That's 1,184 lost jobs. There'll be about 320 signed back to the practice squad, but for 864 players on Saturday, their NFL dream will end. So here's the question from Peter Joy. He says, in view of the impending roster cuts, is there a right and wrong way of cutting a player, and which are the worst examples you've witnessed? Well, Jeff, from the outside, obviously we've heard big news this year about Jeremy Maclin being released by the Chiefs via text message. So there's one, but for you, what in your 30 years have you witnessed in terms of how players have been cut, or what have you heard?
You know, I think it's, you know, that there's no easy way, and I don't think there's even a right way to do it. I watched Aguayo get cut on Hard Knocks, right? And that to me was such a phony deal, right? I mean, you know, what you really need to do, in my opinion, is just be honest and just say, hey, listen, Roberto, you've been a disappointment. We drafted you in the second round. You've missed da-da-da-da. We're going to let you go because you're just not playing well enough. Instead of all the flowery stuff and, you know, you've been a great kid. And the bottom line is the bottom line. And I think the players appreciate that more than anything. Now, when you start talking about hearing it secondhand, that's really bad. And I know of one case in particular, which I won't bring to you, Neil, but where a guy heard it actually on the radio.
No.
And that's a tough one.
Yeah, that's hard. It always amazes me when you listen to those ones on Hard Knocks, and you're right, Aguayo is one of those cases in point where they say, we appreciate everything you've done for us. Well, clearly not that much, because you're sending me out to find new work somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the reality of that situation was the kid got in a rut, couldn't kick his way out of it. The team said, we're moving in another direction. We can't wait for you. And, well, that's fine. That's the way the business works. We're all part of, you know, we're all big boys, and we all signed up for this, right? For every coach and every player, you're going to get fired. You're going to get released. You're going to move to a new team. That's the reality of pro football. So you know, to me, it's always, you know, there's never a wrong time, to be honest. Mm. You know what I mean? I mean, mm-hmm. I just think that that's always the best policy.
All right, a couple more questions to get through here. One from Matthew Inkster, who says, does losing Edelman, does it affect the Patriots' Super Bowl odds? Jeff, just quickly on that, is their chances of winning the Super Bowl lessened, or will they be just fine?
I think they're lessened. To me, they're still the front runner.
Yeah.
But I think, obviously, you know, anytime you lose a player, and you did a great job of, you know, just saying how, you know, everybody thinks about Julio Jones is the greatest receiver in the NFL right now. He probably is. But you just, if you go on production and numbers, last 10 weeks of the season, you know, it was Julian Edelman. So, again, that's they're going to have to find a way to replace that. Certainly not going to help them.
Let's have this one from Grant Blomfield. We just actually touched on this, actually. He said, do you think the NFL will cut preseason games for joint practices? You did talk about the preseason games a little bit, Jeff, or the joint practices. Will they come in favor of the preseason games? Because I'll tell you, let me just actually, I'll just give you a little insight from what I saw in Tampa. The fans, I mean, the stadium was never more than half full for the preseason game. Bear in mind, I was at the dress rehearsal game, the one in the third week of the preseason where the starters play the most. There were season ticket holders sat next to me, and when Jameis Winston came out of the game, they left. By the end of the game, it was a horrible game. It was pouring with rain, as I said. I looked like a classic tourist because we were the only five people sat left in our section. We're wearing those ponchos that try and keep the rain off. It's showering down straight out of the sky. There can't have been more than 500 people left inside the entire 70,000-seat stadium. And then we'd only seen field goals, so we gave up with 2 minutes to go, and we missed the only touchdown of the game. but the fans are not into it, Jeff.
What's that old saying about even mad dogs and Englishmen know when to come out of the sun?
Go out in the Tampa rain.
You know what? To me, I'm like, I guess we're just lifers and junkies.
But I was enjoying it.
I tell you what, I watch every snap to the last kneel down.
Yeah.
Because there's always something in it to me that's beautiful, or a guy that you want to see play, or, you know, when I watched that interaction, those, and I thought Philadelphia and Miami did a great job. Guys stayed up. There weren't any fights. There, you know, I mean, it was really getting work done, right? And I thought to myself, this has got to be the way you got to go, because you just can't. I mean, and even at that, it's dangerous. But
you got to
find a way to limit the hits. Now, who's going to suffer from that, right? I'm going to tell you who's going to suffer. You're going to see less seventh-round free agent kind of guys, Julian Edelman, Cole Beasley kind of guys, making it in the league because they won't get the game reps that they need to show that they can play. Because I'm going to tell you something, what happens. When I was in Kansas City, I remember it. Todd Peterson was our kicker. And we brought in Lawrence Tynes, and we wanted Tynes to win the job. And we went through the first two exhibition games, and Lawrence missed a field goal, and that was it. It was over right then. Even though Todd couldn't kick off anymore, his distance on kickoffs wasn't good, his field goal range was much shorter than Lawrence was, but I remember the argument was, he's been there, we know he'll perform under pressure. Well, if you don't get snaps, if you don't get game reps, how do you prove you can perform under pressure?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only way to do it, isn't it, Jeff? A couple more. Hugh King says, when do the player return ticket sales go on the market? I need tickets. Hugh, I can tell you that the sale of those tickets is going to be imminent. So very, very soon is all I can tell you right now. But follow NFL UK on their social media channels. Keep looking at NFLUK.com. There will be an announcement ahead of time to tell you when you can try and get those tickets. But it's coming very, very soon. And finally, one from Anthony Cameron, Jeff, who says, should the league clamp down on blatant roster weakening, as seen again this week with the New York Jets shopping Matt Forte? It's bad for the competition. Well, not only the Jets, as you alluded to, Jeff, they cut Joe Hayden. He ended up with Pittsburgh. They are actively shopping Brock Osweiler, and they traded a former first-round offensive lineman, Cameron Irving, who was a disappointment in Cleveland, to the Kansas City Chiefs. But the Jets have been accused of it all off-season. Is it their right, Jeff, or is it something that the league can clamp down on? I don't know quite how you manage it.
I'm going to tell you something. Without changing the rules,
yeah,
I don't. What do you mean clamp down. This is their right as an organization to choose a path that they want to go forward in.
And you may grade a player differently than I do. You may
absolutely. So you take a guy like Forte, for example, and I'm a big Forte fan, but you took him at a time where you felt like you were in a position to make a dent in the division, right? You got Brandon Marshall outside, you got a yada, 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 right? We go through the whole deal. It doesn't work out. So now what are you supposed to do? Be forced to keep a guy who's past his prime, that's making a lot of money, when you can move him and get that cap space so that in the offseason or during the year or whatever, you have the ability to improve your roster. So, again, if you do this, and I know it brings up the tanking issue, right? You know, that which is prevalent, more prevalent probably in other sports than it is in the NFL. But I think the new wave of general managers and capologists and presidents and all these guys are looking at it now and they're saying, we don't have time anymore. There's no more five-year plan.
Right.
I mean, I think when Mao Zedong died and some of the old school NFL guys went out to pasture, the five-year plan went out the window.
Right.
Right. These guys need to win now, right? And so if you can't win now, like you're the Jets, that Jets aren't winning this year, right? You got to do everything in your power to win next year and the year after that. So you may have to dump guys. You may have to dump salaries, right? Mm. And again, that's part of having the ability to create a strategy, or else you're always going to be mediocre.
Jeff, I want to thank you because you depressed me a little bit when you talked about Andrew Luck not starting in week one, but you've just uttered the words, and I've just written them down, the Jets aren't winning this year. Thanks for that. You've made me feel much better.
You know what? I'm not banging on the Jets. I think that's the reality of where they're at.
They've got a rebuild.
They're in a rebuild, and that's a position that, you know, you look at Atlanta a couple years ago, and then all of a sudden they jump up to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Why? Because they were able to bring in some guys, and, you know, they got a new coaching regime. Hey, you know, that's your right, right? I think there's a number of teams around the league right now, and this is a discussion for another day, that you can say, here's what you're going to do. You're going to win between 4 and 6, then there's another group that's going to win between 6 and 10, and then there's that elite group that's going to win between 10 and 14, and that's where the Super Bowl champion will come from.
Yeah.
And maybe in another show we can put teams in that category.
Yeah.
But I know one that took a big step in that direction, and with the signing of Joe Hayden, to me, if you're Mike Tomlin and you don't get to the Super Bowl, I'm not saying you got to win it, but with that roster you got, if you don't get to the Super Bowl, that's, you know, there's got to be questions.
Yeah, Pittsburgh also traded for tight end Vance McDonald this week from the San Francisco 49ers. Just one last thing, I mean, I know it from a history point of view with the Miami Dolphins, and I think you're right. If you sometimes you have to take real steps back to take steps forward and rip it up, and that's clearly what the Jets and Browns have done. You know, Miami was so close for so many years with Dan Marino, and because Dan Marino was there, they were frightened to rip it up. They never ripped it up and started again, so they were always kind of middle of the pack or just on the outskirts looking in, because there was never any let's blow it up and start again, because Marino gave them a chance every year.
Yeah, you know, and Neil, I'm not speaking out of both sides of my mouth when I say this. I'm all for continuity, right? I think that's really important. But it's really important when you're winning, right? Continuity when you're losing, it just keeps you losing.
You keep losing.
There's a point where you got to say, right now, this is our reality. We're not good enough. We don't have the quarterback. We don't have this, that, or whatever it is, right? We're up against the cap. I mean, the Cowboys went through it. Almost every team in the NFL has gone through it.
Mm.
You just have to be willing to say, all right, you now have to focus on not this season, but next year and the year after that. And every decision that we make is going to be based upon that, not upon just trying to put a Band-Aid on it and get us to 7 wins and, you know, to keep the fan base happy. That's where I think Cleveland, Sashi Brown and all those guys have taken so much heat. That's where I think if they can just stay to the course, that they're going to come out the other end.
I'm glad you talked about losing there, Jeff, because NFL UK are going to set you and I up for a little bit of losing. So there's a new game this year that fans can play. If you go to www.nflchallenge.co.uk, so play the NFL Challenge game, you get to pick 3 players. You can pick a quarterback, a running back, and a wide receiver. There's no salary cap. And you also add by team a passing offense, a rushing offense, a defense, and a special teams and kicker. There is a UK league, but there's word, Jeff. My sources tell me they're going to start an Inside the Huddle league, and you and I are going to be taking part. So people should go to nflchallenge.co.uk.
Okay, wait a second now. I've had enough losing in one season. I don't want it. Jesus, Neil.
I'm not even going to joke, because you can't joke about somebody getting fired. But I was going to say, they're not going to. I've done it now. I've said it. They're not going to fire you for it, Jeff. You'll be all right, mate. Get back on the horse.
I tell you what, let's do that. I look forward to that. I think yeah. That'd be awesome. You could pick. You don't have a salary cap.
No salary cap, so even
you
I can
pick any. You can pick any defense and special teams you want.
Yep.
Every week.
Yep. And a quarterback. You pick one quarterback, one running back, one wide receiver. Then you have a passing offense, a rushing offense, a defense, and a special teams and kicker. So yeah, you can have your pick.
Shoot, I'm in. I'm in, man. Let's go.
Even we can be capologists in that league, Jeff. So
hey, you know what? I got a question. I got a mailbag question. I want to. Do you have some sort of news you need to tell us, Neil?
Not yet, Jeff.
Okay.
No.
I was teeing up. I just tossed that softball to you. I was just teeing that up for you, brother.
No, Mrs. Reynolds isn't pregnant. There's nothing to say, nothing to report here until things are reported in the right circles. So no, nothing yet. Nothing yet, Jeff. Nothing yet. But I can tell you that starting next week, you and I will also be making our picks next week for week one. It's almost here.
Yes, it is. So if you want to, you know, again, if you want to know what we think, you better tune in.
There you go. They don't want to know what I think. They want to know what you think, Jeff.
No. You know better than that. Anybody, I'm going to tell you something. Anybody that knows anything about football, right, would pay close attention when you speak, because.
Yeah, they would.
I'm not pumping your tires, Neil. I'm just telling you. That's why doing this is so much fun, because I get to talk ball with the guy that understands.
Jeff, let me say that, especially when it comes to picks, because if I pick Team A, then you go and put a lot of money on Team B. But I'm just going to say this about the fans in the UK. I just spent 3 hours plus in the pouring rain, sat next to season ticket holders of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and let me tell you, people wonder about the fans in the UK and the knowledge base. We're ahead in many of the people that I sat close to in Tampa Bay on Saturday night.
No question. And I'm going to tell you something. It's the word's out, right? The word's out, because when I talk to some of the players, and I'm not talking about the English kids. I'm not talking about Lawrence. I'm not talking about, you know, J-Train. I'm not talking about any of those guys. I'm talking about the guys that have never been and are going over to play. Mm. And the word's out that, hey, it's a great environment. The fans, you know, when you're an American and you've never experienced it, the preconceived notion that you have is we're going to go over there and it's going to be like an opera clap and they're not going to know a first down from, you know, fumble. But I'm going to tell you something. The word is out in the NFL community about just how savvy the NFL fans are and how passionate they are in the UK.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. So, Jeff, we covered a lot of news and you tried to break some news, but until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.